Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, families, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that shape, challenge, and sometimes disrupt our daily lives. What does it look like to help teens slow down without lecturing, pathologizing, or telling them to just calm down? Today, we are joined by Stephanie Lochinar, New Jersey's 2025 State Teacher of the Year and the author of a new book, Let the Glitter Settle, Mindfulness for Teens. She offers mindfulness practices that meet teens where they are emotionally, cognitively, and socially. Today, we'll explore why teens feel overwhelmed, how mindfulness can be a practical rather than abstract, and how adults can support teens without minimizing their experiences. Stephanie, congratulations on your newly released book, Let the Glitter Settle, Mindfulness for Teens. The book was a good read and easy to digest. I think it has a lot of valuable steps to help teens negotiate today's stress and beyond. What was the impetus for you writing the book?
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me. So I had been thinking about this book for a long time, actually. I've noticed that my students were experiencing a lot of stress. I brought mindfulness into the classroom. And then it was like I had them for just these 20 days. I teach by marking period. And then they would leave. And I'd be like, oh, but wait, there's more. And they would reach back out and send me little messages. And I wanted something that they could, you know, kind of have a piece of our relationship with them so they could have a piece to continue their practices and to grow from. And then I realized, oh my gosh, there's so many kids who don't even have this opportunity to learn mindfulness in school. There's so many kids who don't have this experience and could use this resource. And so that was really what kind of drove me to put this together.
Well, I commend you on your book. I think you did a very good job and you accomplished exactly what you set out to do.
Thank you.
From your perspective as a teacher, what are teens telling you, I don't know, explicitly or implicitly about how overwhelmed they feel?
So it's similar to the same stuff I feel like that I had growing up. You know, it's the juggling of all the different things. The only thing is now there's all of this technology and social media, so it makes the weight of things that much heavier. And also now you can see what everyone else is doing. So this comparison that we naturally do as humans, now it's just like intensified. And so on a child's developing brain, as they're just starting to identify this sense of self and who they are and their own self-worth, now they have all this extra comparison going on. And, you know, if they don't use the social media because they try to protect themselves, then they feel left out. So there's just this push and pull that is, it feels like there's not really a right answer. So having the right tools to manage all of this stress and all this overwhelm is really supportive for them.
What do adults, from your perspective, most often misunderstand about teen stress?
So teens are, they're a tricky bunch sometimes. And I think something that can be a common misunderstanding or misconception is sometimes they don't always realize the way that they're coming off. So when they're experiencing stress and overwhelm, they might say something without meaning to land a certain way. And I think a real common misconception is that kids just want their phones with them all the time and that they want to have, you know, access to all of these things. And the truth is, when I talk to kids one-on-one and they really tell me what they really think and believe, they want those rules. We feel safe when we have guidelines. We feel safe when there are boundaries, when there is a limit somewhere. That creates a sense of safety. And so, you know, sometimes people think like, oh, well, my kid just doesn't want that, or it's going to be a battle. Yeah, it's going to be a battle. Like, they're not going to be like, yeah, give me all the rules. But deep down, that's what they want, that sense of safety. And to know that at the end of the day, if the rule is the phone goes to the parents at the end of the night, like they want that. They want to know that that can be, you know, one step that they don't have to manage.
Well, how does this constant connectivity affect teens' ability to pause and to regulate their emotions?
Yeah, we have all this stimuli that's coming at us, and our brains naturally look for novelty, right? That's what they naturally And we look for those dopamine hits. We look for those things that are going to make us feel good. And sadly, phones, they do that for us, which feels great in the moment. But then when we're stuck and trapped in our phones for long times, or when we're trying to focus on something else, we realize that our attention span actually starts to shrink. And so that's actually kind of my buy-in with kids when we start talking about mindfulness. I ask kids if they're ever told to pay attention. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, like they're like, yeah, every day, all the time, someone tells me to pay attention. But has anyone ever taught you how to pay attention?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, no, I don't think so. And so I'm like, that's what we're going to do in our classes. I'm going to teach you how to pay attention and to build that skill, because it's a skill to be able to pay attention. So we're going to pay attention on purpose in the present moment. And that's what mindfulness is. And that's a skill that's going to help you in all different aspects of life, not just academics.
Mm-hmm. You know, when stress becomes really chronic for teens, would you share what it looks like in the classroom and at home? I think that would be real helpful, because I don't think, again, you know, we may not pick up on, you know, that stress is the culprit. What's going on?
Mm-hmm. And it can look a lot of different ways for different students when students are experiencing all that stress and being dysregulated for long periods of time. So sometimes it can look like shutting down, where they just are kind of withdrawn, not really fully engaged. And that's where it can get kind of tricky and scary, because sometimes we think, oh, well, you know, they're being compliant. They're just doing what they're supposed to. But they might be, but they also might not be fully engaged again, because they're just kind of turning themselves off because it's too much or it's too overwhelming. So that's something to look for. Another thing is sometimes they will straight up tell you, like they're kind of all over the place. Like they're going a mile a minute. They're almost like a tornado kind of moving through things, jumping from thought to thought or jumping from thing to thing. And sometimes even expressing like, I'm overwhelmed, it's too much. And so helping students to be able to take a step back and to practice a mindfulness strategy doesn't mean that all of that's going to go away, but it helps to be able to put things in perspective, because that's kind of like our step one. Mindfulness is like the step for most things, right? Mm-hmm. We can't solve anything unless we know what's really there.
Well, you know, so often parents and adults may dismiss teen stress as saying it's just a phase. You know, they're just going through their thing and they'll be okay. Why is it, pardon me, why is it important that we not dismiss it as just a phase?
So first, I think anytime any person is experiencing anything, like if we think about ourselves, if we're experiencing something and someone tells us, oh, it's just a phase, you're going to move through it never feels good, right? It doesn't feel good to be dismissed.
No, it doesn't.
No, right? So we want the first
they're
step.
They're belittling it. They're, you know, kind of negating what you're going through.
Right. Yeah. So step one, I think, is always that connection, right? And that's where regulation lies. That's the first step, is always that relationship building. Like, I see you. I hear you, and what you're experiencing, what you're feeling, that's valid. It doesn't mean that all of it is true, like, but it's valid to feel that way. So now that we know that you feel that way, let me help you work through that. Let me help you see this a little bit clearer. Because if we keep telling someone, no, you're not feeling that way, it's just growing, it's building. It's like when we try to push our own feelings down, we know how well that goes, right?
Well, you know, another way of looking at it is actually, we are talking about developing viable, healthy coping skills.
Yes.
I mean, in your opinion, why are so many young folks Why are they experiencing such maladaptive coping mechanisms? You know, what, because you deal with them and you see them all the time, what is contributing to this?
So I think some of it has to do with they understand and know some of these words. Like, it, I think one of the great things is mental health is no longer, like, it's not a bad word. Like, most kids understand, like, I have mental health and I need to take care of it, which I'm, that part is so exciting to me that they're not quite afraid anymore of that. So there's not as much stigma. It's still there, but I think in some of our youth, it's not as strong. But part of it is now they're like, oh, I'm experiencing this thing and it's uncomfortable and I think I'm a little bit anxious. And so I'm going to tell people I'm anxious and then I don't have to do the thing or I don't have to move through it. I'm just going to stop. And so they are starting to recognize these feelings, but they put up the brakes. Instead of learning how to cope or move through, there's more of like a, oh gosh, this is bad. I'm in a danger zone. And so I think both things can be true. Like, we can be good about recognizing things in our mental health. We can realize that we have anxiety or that something makes us anxious or that we're worried. But I think the important part is now, how do we cope with it? Because the truth is, we're going to have stress our whole lives, right? There's going to be stress at some point.
Yeah.
So the important part is learning, how do we cope with, how do we deal with that stress?
Well, you know, I know your targeted audience was young folks, teens, adolescents. However, you know, in reading the book, I saw exercises and interventions that really could apply to most anyone who was trying to reduce angst, reduce anxiety, and coping with daily stress. Now, did I misread that? I mean, would you agree with me? Because that's what I saw. And I, you know, that was a positive because I thought, wow, you know, this book really addresses parents and teachers and whomever may be looking for solutions and tools to help kids cope.
Absolutely. So it's absolutely for everyone, really. I think sometimes as educators, we're so worried about how to support our students that we forget to also support ourselves. And so I hope in some way this is a little bit of like a backdoor way to get to also some teachers too, who are, how do I help my students? And they're reading this and they're like, oh my gosh, I can do some of this for me too. That's actually part of how I came to mindfulness. Was I was in a yoga class, I was learning about some of the strategies and I was like, oh, this would be great for my students. And I immediately was trying to apply it to them. And I was like, wait a minute, if I'm going to be teaching this, shouldn't I be practicing it first?
Yeah.
Like, should I be taking care of myself before I try to help them to do this?
Well, hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I am just honored to talk with Stephanie Lochinar, New Jersey's 2025 State Teacher of the Year. And she is also the author of a new book, Let the Glitter Settle, Mindfulness for Teens. Stephanie, recently, and I just wanted to get your take on this, there are a lot of books coming out about mindfulness. What distinguishes yours from others available?
So there's a lot of books on mindfulness right now. There's not a lot that are geared towards teens and that are really just simple practices with reflections. And the reason I have reflections in there is because we don't learn just from experience alone. We learn from reflecting on that experience. And so I really want these practices to be integrated, to be something that's a part of students' lives so that when things come up and happen, that they have these tools that they can easily access and utilize.
Well, I love the title, but I would like you to share the meaning of the title, Let the Glitter Settle. Especially, what does that mean for teens?
I'm so glad you asked. That's one of my favorite things to talk about. So I love the glitter jar. And I know glitter is controversial, but don't worry. This glitter is inside a jar, so it's not making a mess. But a glitter jar is a jar that is full of glitter and water. And it's sometimes used in classrooms or with little kids. And you shake it up and you just let them watch that glitter. And it kind of trickles down to the bottom. And this can be a regulation strategy. But I love it because it's also an analogy, right? Like that glitter jar is our mind, right? Inside our mind, we have all these thoughts, feelings, emotions, and that can be like that glitter. And sometimes things happen that shake up our jar, like we hit traffic or someone said that thing to us and we're not sure if we're mad or if that was good or bad or what to feel about it, or we have too much homework or we have too many chores or we found out we had to work and we didn't want to, right? And our jar starts to shake and that glitter swirls around all over. And as it's swirling, we can't see through the jar, right? It's a beautiful glittery mess, but we can't see clearly. But if we stop and pause, we practice a mindfulness technique, we can let that glitter settle to the bottom. Now, the glitter is not gone. It's still in the jar. We still have those thoughts, those feelings, emotions maybe, but now we can see clearly. We can make a better choice.
Well, I tell you, I really applaud you because so often we find mindfulness books written specifically about teens as opposed to for teens. So I wanted to commend you about that. I've sent a number of them, you know, from different promoters and publicists. And a lot, they focus on about the team. But as you mentioned, this was directed to the team. So, again, I commend you on that. Let me ask you another thing. How does your approach differ from the traditional mindfulness instruction?
Oh, that's a great question. So I think there are lots of different ways of teaching mindfulness or approaching it. And for me, mindfulness is something that you embody. It's not just a practice that you pull from. Like, it's great to use them as tools, but the goal really is to embody them. And it's kind of like a little bit more of a way of life, right? Like, if I'm living a mindful life, that means I'm constantly checking in with myself. I'm aware of what's on my heart, what's in my mind. I'm aware of living my life in integrity and alignment with what my values are. And so that is my hope for my students, is that, you know, I don't have values I want to impose on them, but I want them to live their life in a way that works for them. What's in their alignment? What are their values? And are they checking in? Are they regulated? Are they safe? And are they in control of their own lives? So well, that, for me, it's really about that embodiment.
Well, I was just going to say that really connects with what I saw and what I read, because accessibility seemed to be a real central part of your work and part of the tools that teens can use to work being accessible. And what I hear you saying is this is something that is with you all the time. So accessibility, would you want to elaborate on that? Accessibility is really important.
Yes, and it's something that we can access at any point. Like, we don't need anything special outside of ourselves. And it's something that anyone can use. And we can use all of our senses in order to do it. It's something that can be with us at all times. And it's really about helping students to feel, I think, empowered and knowing that they have what they need to be successful, that they hold that key, that they don't need to look outside of themselves.
Do you have any suggestions how one might avoid mindfulness becoming another one of those, quote, things to do right? Because, you know, so often in guidebooks, you know, this is the right way. So how do you avoid that happening? Yep.
That perfectionism stuff, man, that comes up all over, doesn't it? Just everything we do. Yeah. So I will tell you a funny story about that, actually, in a minute. Okay. But I think the really important piece is knowing that mindfulness is about present moment awareness and knowing what's rising up. And so even when it's that perfectionist, that am I doing this right? Is this the right perfect way to do it? To kind of check in with ourselves and then to soften a little bit, right? Because the definition I give my students is that mindfulness is present moment awareness with kindness and curiosity. So am I being kind in this moment? Am I being curious in this moment? And oftentimes it's, am I being kind to myself? And am I being open to what's here right now. And there isn't a perfect way to do it. It doesn't, if we want, we can practice every 10 minutes every day, you know, sit on a mat, and that can be your mindfulness practice. But it also can be embodied practices, right? As I'm washing the dishes, I'm noticing the water on my hands, and I'm feeling gratitude for these plates that I have, and being fully present with the dishes as I'm washing them. Mm-hmm. There are many different ways that we can fully bring that in.
You can be in class.
Yes.
That's it. You don't have to involve anyone else but yourself, and you can do it no matter where you are. Again, I asked you to remind us just what mindfulness is and what it encompasses.
So the definition I like to use with my students is mindfulness is paying attention on purpose in the present moment with kindness and curiosity. Usually the definition includes the word non-judgment, but mm-hmm. that can be tricky. Non-judgment, you're like, oh, just don't judge, but am I judging? So the word I like to use is just kindness and curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. The opposite of being judgmental is being curious. So can I be present right here and now with what's happening and just be curious about it without labeling it good or bad, just allow mm-hmm. it to be like the isness of this moment.
Okay. Will you share a simple kind of grounding practice teens tend to respond to well?
Yes. One of, there's a couple favorites, but I think one of them that's the easiest to talk about without seeing is tense and release. So many people know of the body scan. So you kind of go through each part of the body and you relax each muscle as you move through and just pay attention to what's there in the body. And when I do this practice with students, especially younger kids, and they would have kind of a hard time finding that they could feel the relaxation in the muscle, like to differentiate the muscle being, tense mm-hmm. or release. So the one I like to do is called tense and release. So you intentionally squeeze that muscle or hold that muscle so that you can then release it. And so you can feel that difference. And so you can do that through your whole body. So that's one way to help ground and help bring you really present. So you can start from your toes and squeeze your toes and then move all the way up each muscle group, your calves, to your thighs, to your hips, to your stomach, your chest, your arms, even your face, which is a fun one. And your whole body, one big squeeze, and then you just release it. And that's a great way to get really in tune with, to be really aware of and present with our physical body.
Okay. Talk to us about attention fatigue in teens and the impact of just multitasking. Because, we kind of think generally, we're supposed to think that if you multitask, that's great. That's a good thing that you're doing. You can multitask. But I don't know about that. And I'd just like to have you share your take on it.
Yeah. Yeah, we do, right? We also sometimes will brag about how many things we can mm-hmm. do, right? But the truth is, we can't really do all those things at once, right? Our brain actually is jumping back and forth between things. And so we're actually tiring out our brain by doing that. So when we pick one thing, while it can seem boring, we're really helping our brain to focus just on that one task. And oftentimes, maybe not always, but we'll find that we can do it in a shorter amount of time. We can do it maybe more thoroughly, but we're also more present with it. So actually, one of the activities I have in the book is called monotasking.
Yes. Yeah.
One thing, and you just set the timer and you only do that one thing for that time. So that can be really hard because our brain looks for that novelty. It wants to keep jumping. It feels like, oh, I'm doing back and forth. But the reality is that's not always the case.
Well, again, a little further, explain to the listening audience how monotasking really helps us focus and cope with emotions.
Yeah, when we're just on that one task, we're able to put all of our energy and our thought into that one thing. And so when we have other emotions and things come up, it also can be a little bit clearer because we're not as frazzled, we're not doing that jumping back and forth thing. So we can be more present. And we're more mm-hmm. present, we can be a little bit more aware of what's coming up, what's rising in us. So monotasking can be also like just very soothing, can be a lot more relaxing to be able to to complete a task in that way.
What role does breathing play? I know that breathing exercises that can help teens regain control. Let's talk about breathing some.
Yeah, so the breath is always with us. And that is often what people think of when they think of mindfulness, right? Mm-hmm. We think about focusing on our breath, the in and the out. And that is a great practice to do because we know when we're dysregulated, especially when we're heightened, right? Our breath is going to change. It's going to move really quickly and rapidly. And we know our heart is going to beat faster. And so we know when we can regulate our breathing, we can also calm our heart. We can help us to regulate ourselves. But I also don't start with teaching our breath first. And the reason is if students are really, really heightened and you're maybe on the verge of, say, a panic attack, if you start to bring your awareness or attention to your breathing, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes it can help it to elevate even more and it can make it harder to slow down. So in cases like that, I usually teach students things that are outside of us, like listening to sounds or noticing the bottoms of our feet. So in cases when students are really heightened, that's a great place to start, is just to notice things outside of ourselves, the bottoms of your feet, holding something cold, like ice or something, something that's going to shock you back into your body instead of noticing the breath. And there's different anchors we can use in mindfulness. Breath is one of them. Sound is another. And then, like we talked about, the bottoms of our feet, like body is another. So knowing that, you can change that anchor at any point. So you might start a practice on your breath and find that it's getting really rapid and you might feel like that's overwhelming. No problem. Switch right to sound or switch to your body. It doesn't have to be the same anchor.
Well, you also talked about how emotional naming is such a powerful tool for teens. And you know, that's one of the most difficult tools I've seen for teens because they may not be in touch exactly with what they're feeling, what they're experiencing. So elaborate on that emotional naming and how we can get them to a point where they are able to identify exactly what they are indeed experiencing, what they are feeling at that time.
Yes, that's so good. So name it to tame it is what Dr. Dan Spiegel says, right? So I teach my students that when we are activated, when our lid is flipped, right? When we're operating out of our amygdala in that heightened state, we want to name the emotion to tame it. So that actually brings us into our prefrontal cortex because that's the thinking part of our brain. So when we're there, that's helping us to make a better choice. But sometimes students have a hard time of realizing even how they're feeling. So it's another activity I have in the book, but I also do with my students in the classroom, is noticing how we feel when we experience a different emotion. So I have them imagine how you feel when you're angry. What do you notice in your body? You know, do you feel warm? Do you feel tingly? What are those sensations? Because those sensations are actually messages letting you know what emotion is coming up. And then when we understand and know what emotion we're feeling, we're able to do something about it. So helping students to have access and to really tune in to pay attention to what's happening in their own body actually puts them more in control of how they're going to act, behave, and what they're going to put forth.
Let me reintroduce who I am talking to and what we are talking about. Stephanie Lochner, author of Let the Glitter Settle. Stephanie, we've been talking about your book and talking about your book, but would you share with the listening audience where they can access your book, where they can purchase it, and if you have a website or they might want to follow you or whatever, how they might be able to reach out to you if that's an option.
Absolutely. I love it when people reach out. Please do. So my book is available on Amazon. I also have a website, stephanielochner.com, or you can do lettheglittersettle.com. I have free resources that are on there that you can utilize. My email is also on there. My social media is Let the Glitter Settle as well. So please reach out if there are questions. If you make a glitter jar, I'd love to see it. if you have the book, I'd love to see a picture of you with it. And if you want to share your favorite practices, I love having that conversation too.
What do you say
to teens, we're talking about these emotions and how they're feeling and what they're experiencing, who feel like their emotions are just too much. They're too big to handle. I just can't even deal with it. I don't want to talk about it, you know. There's nothing we can do about it. They're overwhelming. What do you say to them? How do you get them to understand that, wait, we can address it?
Yeah, that's actually a part of what we talk about in our lesson. And when we talk about coping skills and we talk about mindfulness, that when things feel like they're too big and it's too much, the most important thing they need to know is that, one, they're not alone, and to find an adult or someone that they trust to talk to. Because when things feel like they're too overwhelming and we feel alone and isolated, that's not a safe place for kids to be. So we want them to know that it's normal to have big emotions, but when it feels like too much, the best thing they can do for themselves is to ask for help. So when it's beyond something that they feel like they can manage, to be with somebody else who can support them through those practices, right? That whole idea of co-regulation, right? If I can't regulate on my own, having a trusted, safe adult to help support me through that.
Do you have suggestions as to who they select? Because that's also important, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I always recommend and suggest our counselors at our school, because they're trained for this. Mm-hmm. Of course, parents, teachers, other adult coaches, but truly for them, the first step to get the first step of help, whoever they feel comfortable and safe with, that whatever adult they feel comfortable and safe with that they can share with. Because if they wait for trying to find the perfect right person, I'm afraid too much time will go by. So I want them just to find that person that they can tell the thing to, and I know that that adult will put them in touch with the right person.
Okay, you tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. It's time for Reflections with Raphael, a commentary from Raphael Holyfield Wimmer, an honor student and gifted musician at the esteemed Girard Academic Music Program in Philadelphia, where he blends intellect with creativity. Whether he's striking keys, sounding drums, or sharing ideas, Raphael brings insight with rhythm, thought with heart, and a fresh perspective you won't want to miss, reminding us that wisdom isn't just a matter of age, it's a matter of vision.
Hey y'all, this is Raphael, and you're listening to Raphael's Reflection. Today, I would like to talk about some of the major changes I'm seeing in this time. Right now is a really weird time in general. Many industries are changing the way they work, even the people they're working with, and I'm not sure whether to be for the change or against it. So many things are different and are changing so quickly that it feels hard to keep up. For example, one of my favorite things to do growing up was see movies in the movie theater. It always made me feel special and was so fun. Although I could have waited a week to see the movie on my TV at home, it just wasn't the same experience. Now, however, with the use of movie theaters on the decline and streaming services on the come up, it has me wondering how much of this change is actually good for the people experiencing it. Like, maybe it was a more meaningful movie watching experience to go out to the theater instead of staying at home when you could be distracted by people talking or other screens. Obviously, certain changes are good without a doubt, like medical and engineering advancements, because they help people and allow them to live healthier lives. But on the other hand, things like artificial intelligence are putting people out of their jobs. This concept is a reoccurring thing. No matter what it is, when there are big changes, there are always bad sides and consequences to those changes. For example, the Industrial Revolution completely changed the way the Western world worked. Almost all of the things that we have now, like electricity and phones and computers, were built off the back of the Industrial Revolution. It was an amazing phenomenon that was necessary. However, as I said before, with every big change, there come downsides and bad trade-offs, and in this case, it is harm towards the environment. The Industrial Revolution started at a time when no one was worried about the state of nature and the environment. On top of this, many things that were popularized during this time, like factories and coal engines, were not good for the environment at all. So although the Industrial Revolution was great for technological developments and innovations, it caused tremendous pollution. This pollution didn't just affect the people during the Industrial Revolution, it has gone on to be the foundation of what many people know today as global warming. This shows how, although there were many lasting benefits to this revolution, the downsides had their own lasting effects that people still must deal with to this day. It just shows how everything good comes with a price. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed my reflection.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. Stephanie, you have just been so very, very thorough and helpful. And I know you talked about the census, but I wanted to ask you to just elaborate a little bit more on what role the senses play in mindfulness. Because you're talking about all the senses. You're not just talking about sight or hearing, you know, all of them, the touch, the smell. And would you talk more about the role that senses play?
Yeah, so our brain is amazing. It's actually scanning and taking in, using our senses, all of this different information all the time. So it's coming in kind of all at once, and it has to pick and choose what's most important. And so when we're practicing mindfulness, now we're saying, okay, I'm going to choose which ones to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And so we can choose which of those senses to kind of lean into and make that the focus. So that's what helps us to build that attention and to build our focus, is by choosing that sensation. So we can focus on all of them, but if you do them all at once, it's too much. Yeah. So our brains naturally select. Yeah. So this is about, what can I focus on right now to help me to feel more present in this moment? What's happening in this moment? And the senses are happening in this moment, mm-hmm. right? Our thoughts, they're going to come and go, and they will take us all sorts of places. But our senses, that's right here. That's right now. And that is where our power is. Our power is right here and right now.
Because they can stop and think, what do I smell?
Mm-hmm.
What do I hear? And just, you don't have to be any special place. You can,
right.
Again, I think that is the key there. You know, when it comes to the adults, how can adults model some of these practices instead of just recommending them? So often, you know, adults and parents are good for telling you what to do. But, you know, how can they model these practices?
Oh my gosh, that is so perfect and true, right? How many times have we ourselves or someone else been like, I'm not going to do this, but this is what you should do. So I think it's exactly that. It's modeling those behaviors. And that's something that I try to do as much as possible in the classroom. If I have a moment where like it's getting loud and it's overwhelming, I will even say to my class, like, whoa, guys, it's really loud. I'm getting overwhelmed and overstimulated. I need a moment to take a breath. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to, you can practice with me. I'm gonna take 3 breaths right now. And then I'll do that with the class. So I think modeling it and naming it and also allowing ourselves to be human. I think sometimes there's this idea like we're the adult, so we have to like know all the things and look like we're perfect. And that's not helpful, right? Because if we're perfect and they're trying to grow up to be perfect, that's just going to lead to disappointment. So how do I manage when things feel overwhelming? How do I practice mindfulness? How is this part of my life? Because kids aren't going to pick up and do something if it's not what we're showing them, what's around them. It becomes part of just part of the way the culture, the way that we live our lives.
Well, I commend you on the format of your chapters. I particularly found the reflection questions and exercises at the end of each chapter very insightful. Why did you include reflection questions and self-rate? I like that. That self, what was it, a self-rating scale, I remember, in each chapter?
Yes, thank you. I'm so glad you did. I really want students to reflect on the experience they're having. Our learning really comes from the reflection, the thought that happens after the experience. So I want mm-hmm. them to start to embody this and really think about how it's landing with them, and to also recognize that things land differently with us in different moments. Right. And different times, different things are going to feel differently. And just to really be aware and to bring that awareness just one level deeper. And then there's also this little rating that I have, which I always make a really big deal about, but it's not about judging like a, you know, you got a 5 out of 10. Just where am I today? Like, how is my attention today? How is my ability to find stillness? How is my breath today? And just being aware of what capacity I have in this moment. Because when I know that, then I can make better choices as I move forward. I know, like, okay, I'm not at max capacity. So today is not the day that I'm going to, you know, bring up that really difficult conversation. You know, today is the day where maybe I need to take it a little easier.
How do these tools help teens recognize their growth on their own terms?
I think it just helps them to really bring in a little bit more awareness of where they are in that moment. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, the more aware we are in each moment, the more that we can see our own growth and to recognize how much we are changing and how much maybe more their attention is growing, or even just their awareness of themselves in general. Like, oh my gosh, these things are really important to me. I care a lot about, you know, whatever the subject is, whatever the thing is, just to help them to be more in tune with themselves.
Well, in this last section here, I'd like to talk about stimulation and rest and sleep, because we always talk about exercise and how important exercise is, but how does one transition from all this stimulation to rest? Do you have suggestions for teens and parents, folks listening, as to how to kind of wind down and transition?
Yes, absolutely. We have such busy and full lives, and so we have all this cortisol that's just like running through us throughout the day. And especially with our phones. And then, you know, we think we're going to be like active, active, active. And we're like, oh, and now I'm just going to go to sleep.
Right. It doesn't work that way.
No. Our brain is like, oh, no, now I'm going to go in circles. Like, no. So what I recommend and what I actually practice for myself, too, is putting the phone down in a way about an hour before I go to bed. Some research also suggests even earlier, but I like to do about an hour. And then I play soft music and I just have like a little bit of a wind down. I have something like nice to drink, a little bit of tea. I do a little reading, but doing something that is slowing you down, that is not attached to a screen, letting the lights also be a signal. So dimming those lights for yourself. If you like to crochet or knit or do something with your hands, doing a little bit of that as well can be nice. And also maybe a little bit of reflection. I have a mirror practice that's in there. Or if you, I mean, I got tucked in until I was like 16. So if you're tucking your kid in, if you're having that bedtime conversation, that's a great time to do like a little day review, like your highlight. What was the best part of today? What was the challenge that you had today? What are you looking forward to tomorrow? Just the time to really like let the day go, like kind of check in, because our brain wants to know like this is finished. And then when we kind of give it those signals, it helps us to be able to fall asleep and hopefully have a full night's sleep.
And I always think that mindfulness itself can help the nervous system prepare for sleep.
I mean, oh, yes.
Would you agree?
Absolutely. One of my favorites, like we talked about the tense and release. For me, that's a great one because my mind maybe isn't always running, but that tension and those thoughts somehow are stored into all my muscles. And I'll be trying to fall asleep and realize, oh, every muscle in my body is engaged. So doing a little tense and release when you go to sleep, or even those deep belly breaths when you're laying on your back and you can notice, am I breathing out of my chest or am I breathing out of my belly? Is my breath getting slower? Am I able to notice it and just allow it to flow without controlling it? And that can really help to let your body rest, or even noticing sound, right? If you have like a noise machine and just letting that be like the blank sound and just noticing that sound, that can also help to put you right to sleep.
Well, why is sleep such a critical issue for teens right now?
Sleep is so important for us, for our health, for our wellness, and particularly for teens as their brain is still developing and growing. And so being able to make sure we get enough sleep and to get quality sleep is essential. Our body needs that time to rest so that it can continue to grow and to develop.
What feedback have you received from teens themselves?
So teens are fun, especially in the middle school, where when I first bring in mindfulness, you know, anytime, it's always like with an eye roll and, you know, they'll complain, they don't want to do it. But if I go to skip a lesson, or if I'm like, you know what, today we're going to do a short practice, then they'll get upset. Oh, man, not what? Why are we doing a short practice today? I really need it today. Like, so the thing with teens is they're going to complain about the things that are good for them. But as adults, it's our job to know that this is the thing that is good for them. And they're going to complain in this moment, but it still is good for them. And they're going to be thankful later on. So they kind of like, it's almost like they secretly like that little push and pill. Like they like to complain about it. But I've also gotten, you know, emails from kids who are in college, who are using these practices, kids in high school who are like, oh my gosh, the workload is heavier. I'm so grateful that I have these practices and strategies now because I feel like I can manage myself and my time better. You know, so that part is, that part makes me feel like, okay, they gave me the eye roll, but the eye roll's worth it. It's okay. This is a good eye roll.
Yeah. Do you have any suggestions to adults and parents to, because so often they have the urge to fix rather than support. And do you have any suggestions as how adults can resist that urge?
That is so tricky, right? Because we do, we want things better. How can I make this better for you? And so we can sometimes see the solution. And as an adult, we want to help our students to be able to have these skills themselves. And so even though it's uncomfortable to watch them sometimes a little bit in the struggle, our job is to really lean in and to be with them, to do this with them. So that idea of co-regulation, but also it's the same thing with like problem solving. Like, how can I be with you to let you know that I'm here? You're not doing this alone and we can figure it out together, but I'm not going to do it for you. I'm going to do it with you. Like, I'm here. Let's brainstorm. And that's one of the things I love to do with my students when they ask me for something is I'm not going to give you the answer, but what do you think some possible answers are going to be? And I'll help you work through it. Like, what are some of your choices? What are your options here? So one step is just helping kids to see that there are options. What are your options in this moment? And then letting them choose that. And then helping them work through the choices that they're making.
Well, we didn't talk a lot about exercise, but do you have any comments on the role of physical exercise and what it may play in coping and mindfulness?
Movement is so important, especially in closing that stress cycle and helping us to be regulated. So it's funny because when we talk about mindfulness, we often think about sitting on a mat, right, and just noticing our breath. But there are lots of ways that we can have mindful movement. And that's something that I try to show my students as much as possible. Like, it can be a walking movement, and we're just noticing the way that the ground feels on our body. But the idea of moving in general can help us to move from one state to another. So when we're really overwhelmed, that's something that we can do to help us and get our brain into a better learning state. And it's something that I actually use a lot for myself. When I'm in a state where I have a lot of stress or a lot of worry, I know that the first thing I need to do is if I work out first, I know I'll be in a clearer headspace. So helping students to find that movement, and also things like a wall push can help, or noticing somatic things. So there's different ways to incorporate that movement and engaging those muscles to get that stress out that way.
Well, Stephanie, it's been real. It's been really great. I've enjoyed talking with you. One, I think, closing question. What gives you hope about teens today?
I think teens, what gives me hope about our teens and our future is that our teens are more open, and I think they're more aware of mental health and mental wellness than at least I was when I was that age. And so seeing their openness and to see their heart and their care, that is what gives me hope.
Great. Any closing words of wisdom?
When life feels like it's too much, sometimes we just need to let that glitter settle. So whatever that means for you, taking that moment to find your center, I wish that for each and every one of you.
Well, it has been real, and I really have enjoyed it. And when is your next book coming out?
I'm working on it right now, actually.
Okay, well, keep me in mind. It's time out for 411 Teen. It has been a real delight talking with Stephanie Lochinire. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with 411 Teen and reminding us that teens don't need to be fixed. They need tools and trust and a space to breathe. We really appreciate it. To my listening audience, much appreciation for your time and ear. I invite you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen here on 88.9 FM WFSU. 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. If you would like to participate in the 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Teen at WFSU.org.